Welcome to Reformed Media Review. My name is Camden Busey. I'm here with Jared Oliphant, and today we're going to discuss Logos Bible Software version 6. Jared and I both recently received review copies of Logos 6, so full disclosure there, but we are happy to discuss the software today, talk about some of its features and what's different from Logos 5, as well as our general use cases, and then speak a little bit critically about a few items. But Jared, what do you think overall of Logos 6 now that you've had a couple weeks to look at it?
I definitely like it. There was some buzz about it. I think Logos did a great job of promoting this new release first, because you heard a little bit of buzz even before it was released, and
right.
They did a good job of, you know, partnering with people, bloggers, and people who want to get the word out, including us, and just wanted everybody involved in that capacity to tell what are the new features and how do you use it, and, you know, post screenshots. I saw them do requests for things like that on like Twitter and Facebook and those kinds of things. So it's been fun to see some of the like grassroots interaction from users as they start to look at some of the new features and how they use it on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question particularly, yeah, I definitely like it. We'll get into some of the details, but overview, it's been fun to see what they offer that's new, and then continue to use some of the helpful resources within the program that I've used since Logos 5 even.
Right. And I use Logos every day, multiple times a day. It's definitely within my workflow, both as a pastor, but also just as a Christian in my daily devotions. So I've been using Logos exclusively for quite some time now, probably a couple of years. And I love it. I think it's really useful. I'm certainly no expert, and I think that actually might be an advantage for this particular review, because we can speak about how we use it. If you'd like to find out more details about all that Logos can do, then visit their website, logos.com, and they're very strong on providing a lot of tutorials and posts about how to do new things. You can also find other reviews online of people talking about the software, but just to preface our own discussion, this is just a meager take by two people who really enjoy the software but are offering our own perspective on things. So is this a multi-perspectival interview or review?
Bi-perspectival?
Bi-perspectival.
I don't think we'll
do it. Does sound
that,
odd.
Yeah, and just to piggybacking on what you said too, uh-huh. For those who are curious about particular features, what I've done when I have a question on something like, what did I enter recently? I saw a feature that they said that was new, and I didn't know exactly how to use it. And so usually what you can do is you can go to YouTube and just type in like Logos and, you know, whatever the new feature is that you're looking for. So like,
sure.
I think the question I had was on the cultural concepts tool. How are you using that? How do they recommend you use it? And so what I did is I just Googled it. It was like, you know, Logos cultural concepts tool. And the first thing that popped up was a YouTube video. And so they, you know, have screenshots and they really walk you through it in an easy way. So just, you know, on the website itself, Logos's website has a lot of stuff too.
They do an helpful. Awful lot.
But if you want to get just
over.
Kind of the
or hover over support, you can see all sorts of stuff. And they have a training section, a desktop training. They have seminars if you really want some in-depth stuff. They have a blog, and they're posting videos. And all that's available through the Logos software as well. So if you have the software or a version of the software, you can get loads of material. But I've been very impressed with their offerings on training. It's definitely right at your fingertips.
Yeah, and I should also mention that it's pretty needed too, because this program is very complex, and you can do so much with it that training is really by necessity when it comes to this. And so if you've been a Logos user, if you're thinking about diving into the Logos world, don't be discouraged if it takes a little bit of ramping up to becoming a user that is somewhat comfortable with the program, because there's just a lot going on. And so I don't know how you avoid that, because if for any program that has a ton going on like this one, then there has to be some education involved. I think of, you know, I just got into Scrivener. Scrivener is the same deal. There's a lot of functionality and
it was so different from like Microsoft Word. The fact that it's different makes it so fun and neat, but you're right. It's kind of like a paradigm shift to think about how to write in Scrivener versus Word. Logos is by its very nature, I mean, it's an advanced tool, and you can do basic things. It's not too complicated to figure out, but if you want to do anything of substance, it might take some getting familiar with. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. So, Camden, I don't know what you had in mind, but I figured we'd mention a couple things that we use in Logos just kind of regularly, and maybe some new features.
I think that's good. Yeah, let's talk about our workflows. So what's a general way that you approach Logos, and what do you use it for?
Yeah, my basic layout, you'll see that they have different kind of layouts that are different panels, I guess, within Logos that you can choose from. So there's search, and then you can have obviously a Hebrew Bible up there, and then like your library is another panel, and then something like the Bovings Reformed Dogmatics and another panel. And so I usually have a search up there, my library, the Greek and Hebrew text up there, the ESV. They do a format where they have almost like a section below where you can see the original languages and the morphology and things like that. And so that's my basic flow, and then I have the reading lists, and I haven't used that as much as I should. I need to use that, like you said, for devotions. I just do it manually, really, but I need to work in some kind of reading plan. You can do read through the Bible in a year in all kinds of different ways, where you do
custom
New Testament, Old Testament, and switch off and on with that, or you can just do it chronologically. They have a lot of options, and then you can also set up your own reading plans for larger works or whatever works are in there. And so if you want to read through Voss's New Reformed Dogmatics, let's say in a year or 6 months, whatever it is, then you just plug in the time period and what you want to read, and you can just go through the daily plan that way too.
Yeah, I have a few layouts. I just have a real basic New Testament layout for when I'm working on preaching through Mark at the moment. So when I'm working on those texts, I bring up the New Testament layout. And then in the evening services, we're working through Judges. So I bring up an Old Testament layout. And for me, it's pretty stripped down. I focus on, I have the English Standard Version, which is a text I preach from. It's their Pew Bible. That's the version we have at our church. And then I also have either the Nestle Aland Greek New Testament 28th edition for the New Testament layout, or the Lexham Hebrew Bible, which is their digital copy of the Hebrew text. And those are laid out side by side in two big fat columns. Then I have a third column usually for information, and that's if I click on a word. You can change the way this works. Either when you hover over a word, it'll show you information in that panel, or I have it set to clicking just for footprint. I find that it churns on my processor a little bit too much when I have the hover over everything going. And so I can click on a word. I just clicked on Exhalthin here, and it'll give me, from Mark 6:1, it'll give me all the information that I need. It'll tell me how different versions have translated it, even though I don't have other versions of the text open. So I can see that the ESV and RSV translated, he went away. The NRSV says he left. The NASB 95 version says he went out. It tells me different definitions. So I've got the Lau or Lu Nida, I don't know how to pronounce that, lexical information. It'll parse it for me and do all that sort of thing. So if I have forgotten that is indeed an aorist active indicative third person singular, not too difficult of a word, but if your Greek's a little rusty, this is certainly helpful to have all that information right at the fingertips. But that's really basic stuff, and that most Bible software will do at least that much. But this is much more powerful than that, and I can go in and do sentence diagrams. I can do pericope layouts and discourse analysis and all that kind of stuff, and pull up resources that are already created in there, and then kind of compare them to my own work to see if I've kind of gone wrong or if I'm seeing something that some other commentators didn't notice, which is unlikely, but that sort of thing. That's just kind of my basic textual analysis workflow. That's pretty simple, but it gets me into the text. Of course, you can do searches. So if I wanted to search on like my passage, I'm planning on preaching Mark 6:1 through 13 next, so I could just type that in and do an everything search, which is one of the new features of Logos 6, and then it'll bring up everything, like Bible references. It'll bring up everything in my library that's tagged, so even chapters of books that mention that part of Mark. atlas maps that might have to do with Nazareth, for instance, and show me maps of Nazareth and the surrounding area. Bring up dictionary entries, encyclopedia type entries, everything in your library, which is an awful lot of stuff if you buy a base package. But in terms of just daily reading, I do daily reading through Logos. Part of it's because I read a lot on a tablet, but also on my mobile phone and certainly on my desktop. So I like the idea that if I have some time, whether I'm waiting somewhere, like, you know, if I'm at the dentist or something and I want to read part of some daily reading or something, or if I'm at the office, it doesn't matter. As long as I have a device with me, I can read. For a long, long time, I always read out of a physical Bible, but I found that this works well also, and partly because I don't just have Bible reading in my plan. I also am reading through Charles Hodge, reading his systematic theology, and it should finish at the end of the year. So I've made myself a yearly reading plan for Hodge, where I've said, show me, I want to read through Hodge, I want to do it in 1 year, and I only want to read Tuesdays through Saturdays. And so it just made everything. And so I know the next day I go in and read my thing. And if I forget or don't get through it that day, then the next day it just tells me that I'm a day behind, and it shows me what I need to read. It's no problem at all. And it syncs between all my devices, and I don't have to carry those three green volumes around with me everywhere to be able to do it. In addition to that, I read the ESV. I read, I have that going just to read through it once the year. I used to do it twice a year, but because I'm reading some other things, I just do once a year. So I have a New Testament reading and an Old Testament reading every day, and then I'm reading through the Greek New Testament. So that's kind of I have four plans set up to make sure that I get through the entire Bible once, the Greek New Testament once, and then all of Hodge. And then next year I'm kind of planning to do Richard Muller's Post-Reformation Reform Dogmatics. We'll see if I want to do that in 1 year. It's my plan. I might move that to 2 years to see how much. If it's more than, 15 pages a day, I might move it to a 2 year plan. We'll see. But that's generally my workflow. Now, to connect that with Logos 6, the basic workflow has not changed. Some of the look of Logos 6 is different. Not much. It's refreshed. I think it's attractive looking. But in terms of just what the basic, meat and potatoes of what I do hasn't changed at all in terms of Logos. But that doesn't mean that there are not things of great value in the software, especially things that are useful for when I want to do some more advanced study. But what are some of these features you've noted, some particular ones, Jared, that you've identified and you find yourself using them very often, or are they kind of nice to haves or great when you're in a pinch? What's new, at least for you, in Logos 6?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, particular to me, right now I'm not a pastor, so I'm handling it differently than
sure.
You do. But
it's helpful to hear how different people use the software, because we have all sorts of people listening out there that are going to be using it in different ways.
Yeah, and I would say, again, this isn't really unique to Logos 6, so I'll come back to that. But for me, doing papers and especially working on the thesis, the time saving that it allows me to save is pretty unbelievable. I mean, you mentioned Muller's works, and I use those constantly and cite it constantly through papers and eventually my thesis as well. So say if I search for Pactum, my thesis is going to be on the Pactum Salutis, and it definitely comes up in a couple of Muller's volumes. And when I cut and paste, it just formats everything for me. And so every single time I cite even the footnote, whatever format you want that in, it just automatically does, literally everything that you ask it to do. So every time I cite, it's saving at least a few minutes, because one, I don't have to copy it over, and then two, I don't have to figure out all the formatting of each footnote. And so when you get into, let's say, like a 20 to 30 page paper, if you're citing that many times, let's say you're citing whatever it is, 10 to 15 times on a particular work through Logos, then you're saving tons and tons of time through that paper.
Right.
So
even
for
just
me,
the copy and like if you're doing quotations, even that is huge.
Exactly. Yeah. So as far as like scholarship, man, it's just it's pretty remarkable, and also saves you from error, really, because it's you can count on the reliability of the works. I go back and double check every once in a while.
I think that's important. I want to make sure people know I love Logos, but I do notice there's quite a few typos in Charles Hodge.
Oh, are there?
And some of them were pretty lewd. I mean, like, it changed it to words that weren't like... And I've emailed a couple of those onto the team so that they would correct them. And I'm getting constant updates on all sorts of things in my library. So I'm assuming they're fixing things. But the kinds of errors that it makes lead me to believe that it was optically scanned, that it probably had done OCR, optical character recognition, and then digitized that way. And so I always know what Hodge meant, generally speaking. It's not a problem of me not understanding, but if I was doing a dissertation on Hodge, I would not use that resource exclusively. Just because...
That's helpful to know. Yeah.
Just for that reason. So just kind of caveat emptor. It depends on how you use it, and it's always good to double check and cross-reference your sources there too, especially for scholarly work. But I do notice it's probably every 3 or 4 days I notice something.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, the things that I've been working with have been like Bob Inc. And again,
right.
Mueller.
And if they have digital editions of those, I mean, the Hodge volumes are mimeographed and they're old, so it's harder for an OCR probably to read them. But at the same time, if the newer versions, like an English version of Bob Inc. and even Mueller, it's possible that they acquired a digital edition from the publisher. I don't know how that works. And if that's the case, then I'm sure those are much more reliable than some old text, you know, that has been photographed or photocopied. Because you look, you know, I've got the Hendrickson, you know, the cheap Hodge on the shelf. And I just don't like reading them. I mean, they're like bear traps. They're not really attractive typographically. And they're clunky, but I love it in the digital. But at the same time, I can see if that's the copy they're working off. I have no idea, but I can see why. I can see technologically why typos had got into that system, and I'm sure they're improving it. But just at the moment, you know, if you're doing scholarly work, you always want to double check.
Right. Well, that's it. Yeah. So that's a good point. But to your point about the new features, the one that got the most attention, at least from what I saw, was this new feature of visual copy.
It's pretty neat.
It is, and it's a simple idea. All it is really is you've seen probably sometimes someone circulates a quote, and the quote is just text against an image background. And what Logos has done is just give you a bunch of those images that you can pretty much visually or virtually paste text onto. So you can go into whatever book that you're reading and take out, you know, a paragraph or two. It's not going to be super lengthy quotes, but your basic quote, and put it against the background of some really cool visual images that they've created. And then you can save that file as an image file, and you can share it on Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
Send it
and
to a PowerPoint. Automatically,
yeah, exactly.
You just say like send a PowerPoint and it sticks it in there as a slide.
Right. So if you're doing a presentation somewhere. And so part of the reason that got such good visibility is because it's a very shareable thing feature in Logos. So I thought that was smart of them to do. I didn't really have something that could do that for me because I'm not a big Photoshop user or anything like that. And so it's a good quick way if you're not skilled in that area to just throw something up for a presentation or just to share around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the one that got my attention even before I browsed around with this copy.
Yes. And that's kind of one of the features that is kind of one of it makes the product pop a little bit, and people are really interested in that. I think it's cool. I don't have a whole lot of use for it week to week because I'm not making presentations and don't use PowerPoint while I preach, but I could definitely see this being handy in different situations, and it's pretty neat. And they also have every day their Logos designers create some word art from different Bible verses. I love seeing those, and they pop up on the Logos homepage in the app. So whether I get it, well, in the application, whether it's on desktop or mobile, and I like seeing those every day. And I know people like to tweet those as well.
Right. Yeah. So other things. So it'd be good for like a sermon quote or something. You know,
oh, sure.
If you're sending out, what's this week's upcoming sermon going to be about? You can either do a quote from the sermon or a
Bible version.
So there's a lot of different ways to use it.
You could tweet it. You could do all sorts. Put it in a newsletter. Put it on the blog post on your church website. There's a lot of uses for it, and it's just super simple. I just highlight it and secondary click it, and then do visual copy, and then you just pick the background you want. Boom.
Right.
It's done. And you could save it as an image or send it to a PowerPoint. Have you played around with the Atlas maps? They have some new Atlas tools. Have you used any of those?
I haven't yet. I'd be interested to hear your take.
I've used them a lot, but I appreciate the base package. Logos 6 has a lot of new maps, I believe, and the search is pretty neat. So I'm on the system here. I can just go do a search, and I'm preaching out of Mark 6. So this is on the fly. Except the fact that this is an audio podcast probably means this isn't very exciting.
Yeah, we'll edit all this out.
Yeah, I wonder if I right click or secondary click hometown. I don't think it's smart enough to know that they mean Nazareth. I'd be really impressed if it was. Oh, check it out. Yeah, this is pretty amazing.
Hold it up to the microphone because I can't see.
Yeah, I secondary clicked hometown in Mark 6:1, and it indexed, it knows when I look that this is referring to Nazareth. I can click that Nazareth place, and then I can looks like I can do a search on that. Search this resource, search all, search everything. Let's do that. Everything search on Nazareth. And it pulls up my fact book. That's kind of their encyclopedia. That's new. The fact book is new. So it's pulling up an entry on Nazareth in the fact book. Whole bunch of Atlas results. So I have a bunch of maps that are available. It's giving me English Standard Version cross references to verses that mention Nazareth, but also verses that mean Nazareth. So in Matthew 9:1, and getting into a boat, he crossed over and came to his own city. So it found that, even though it doesn't say Nazareth.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in Mark 6:5, it's highlighted, and he could do no mighty work there. And it knows that there is Nazareth. So that's, this is really intelligent.
Yeah. They've done some work for you.
Yes. It's pulling up a library results that refer to Nazareth. So that's all sorts of things, biblical places, books, Lexham resources, anything in my library, which is quite a few things now, thanks to Logos, that refers to Nazareth. So that's really powerful, especially when you're doing some Old Testament. Well, I'm going through Mark, so it's very helpful to understand Galilee. And a week or two ago, I was in a verse with the Gerizim demoniac, which just talks about the Decapolis, that's a collection of 10 cities, and you know, boom, I could pull up a map and all that's there. And you can just print maps, you can send them to PowerPoint and do all sorts of really fun things with the maps as well. So it's all there, and it's all at your fingertips. And this is kind of the real horsepower at work, because this sort of thing in Bible atlases, in hard copy resources, would be really tough and tedious. But you get everything right here at your fingertips, which is really neat.
Yeah. Overview on the new features, and I'll list a couple of them just so that we don't leave some of them out that you might want to pay attention to. But I would say as an overview and general principle, a lot of these things are going to be occasional. And so you're not going to be using them every day or every single time you're going to dive into a text. But once you do get into a text where these are relevant, they can become very, very powerful and handy to really get a broad understanding of the verse, number one, and how it's connected to other passages as well, and then some things that you might not initially realize. And so, like I said, they've done so much work for you that you just have everything at your fingertips, pretty much, that you could imagine.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But just a couple of the new features, and they highlight this on a couple of their blogs, and so you might have seen this already, and you can definitely find it pretty easily. But they have what is called a weights and measures converter.
Yeah.
And so, for example, if you're reading in scripture and you look at 100 cubits, they say, you know, that's about 4 bus lengths or so. So you can get an idea of what they're talking about. So again, that's not going to pop up every single time you read a passage, but when something like that does pop up, it adds a lot of helpful clarification to it. Another one is that it's a text converter that transliterates from the Greek or the Hebrew, depending. And so that's just, if you want a transliteration of something very quickly, then they have something there that, that can do that for you.
That's a wonderful solution to an annoying problem, because okay. Sometimes you need to, some authors or publishers will want you to have a transliteration rather than the actual original. Right. And that is a pain to try to get all those diacritical marks and the weird whatever things, whatever they're called, all the extra markings, like the line over the E and stuff like that. And if you don't know Unicode and all these shortcuts, that's a real pain in the rear. You know, a transliteration tool is actually very helpful, even for people who are very familiar with the original language. So it's not just a tool for people who haven't had original language training. It's actually handy for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So speaking of that, the Greek and Hebrew, there's a Greek and Hebrew alphabet tutor for writing and pronunciation. It just helps you there with both of those aspects. There's morphology charts, so you can see the different lemmas that are used in various ways throughout Scripture. There's one cool feature. There's a few infographics that they've included. And so one of them that I took a look at was Solomon's Temple. I don't know if you saw that. It's kind of like getting a tour of Solomon's Temple, and it's in this 3D type of image, and so it walks you through just all the different features, why different parts are named what they are, and then the verse and passages that either give them their names or the context for it. And so that's a really cool feature. Again, if you're, you know, wanting to research about Solomon's Temple and wanting to get a better idea of the background to it and the different features, it's really helpful. And there's a lot of those actually they've included in this.
Yeah, that's some of the really, really neat stuff in here. It's so helpful. And whether you're a student or a teacher, these resources are invaluable. And they're all hooked in. It's not like you have to know what you're looking for. If you're reading a text, it's all tagged and connected to that text through Logos. Like I said, you can even look at a preposition here, and not a preposition, a pronoun, and just find the place that it refers to. It's pretty amazing.
yeah, definitely. And so on my end, just two more quick features that I'll mention that are new. They have a canon comparison. And so if you click on that, they have three different categories, and I'm about to explain why this is a cool feature. There's a category called traditions. And so if you click on Roman Catholic, let's say, under the traditions category, then it'll tell you what is in the Roman Catholic canon. If you click on the documents, under the documents section, if you click on Origen, let's say, then it shows you that he had 37 items in his canon. And that's a low number because Pauline epistles are one of the items. So you can see how that shakes out as far as the different books go. But you can also do the same for like codices. And so Codex Alexandrinus has 79 items in its canon. And again, this is something where if you're looking into this, it's a helpful feature, but you won't necessarily use it constantly. But it's there for some real value if you're looking at that kind of thing.
Right. It's pretty advanced stuff, but it's all it is right there.
And then just the last one that I'll mention, they have a parallel gospels reader so that you can look at
Need that.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. And there's three different versions of it. And so it's pretty self-explanatory, but the panels line up so that you can basically read the same event or whatever else is going on, you know, throughout the synoptics and even John, if you want that. So that's really handy for Gospels work.
Yeah, that's really useful. I'm having the hardest time getting through Calvin's commentary on the Gospels here. Stuff's all out of whack. So I have to usually go, there's no index in the back of my copy. So, in my hard copy. So, this is a place that Logos can really save me some time. And I didn't know about that. Doesn't surprise me. But just goes to show, Logos will pop up and be useful to you in ways you don't anticipate.
That's right.
You know, they also have this visual filter. I noticed this on one of their posts today that you can kind of change the look of it. Like if you want to read the Bible without the chapter and verse markers, you can easily shut that stuff off. If you want to turn on and off red lettering, you can arrange the text as a list rather than paragraphs. So all that stuff is customizable. And it's really handy if you just want a kind of a literary way to read without the headings and the verses and the numbers, and just want to read it as a book as it was originally intended. You know, it's easy to do. And it's just little things like that they've paid attention to and gotten in there. We mentioned the hovering thing, and that can be a little bit of a processor hog. I noticed the footprint on this is kind of heavy. I have noticed my computer is a little long in the tooth. It's a 5-year-old MacBook Pro, but it's still a Core i7 processor, so it's still a fast processor, and I have 8 gigs of RAM. If I pull up my activity monitor, I can tell you my memory footprint. Last I checked is about 500 megs. So it's pretty heavy. It's 542 right now, and I'm not doing much with it. I did one search and it's just sitting here, not doing anything. So it's eating up 542 megabytes of RAM. The CPU, it's just sitting here. So it's about 3-4% load. But I have noticed that when I get an update, it does that indexing thing, and that really is a hog. I just got, but it's temporary.
Yeah.
But and you can pause it, but you got to know if you're getting a library update, it wants to index those resources. And the first time you get Logos, if you're going to index it for the first time, it's going to be several hours, with a pretty fast computer.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, for the listener, I would say, I don't know if I would put it as exactly a negative, but it's something that should be included in your expectations of the project. And that is that, yeah, I have a 2011 MacBook Pro.
And yours probably has a solid state hard drive too, doesn't it? Or not?
No, it doesn't actually.
Oh, so see, that's something that, so people with SSDs, it might be much faster. So, you know, take our experience with a grain of salt.
Right. But I've noticed the same things. I mean, it's when I go to open it, it can take a very long time to just open, and then also just to close. And like you said, Camden, when I'm indexing, that can really slow my computer sometimes to a crawl. And so there are some times where you just have to be prepared that if you're going to open up Logos, because it's so powerful, because it uses so many different features and just does so many things all simultaneously, that it may slow things down and kind of cripple some other things. So you might want to have not a whole lot of other applications going, or count on some, you know, multitasking across your computer in that sense.
How are people able to get Logos? I noticed looking at the website, you can download it. I was under the impression, and I've got better information now, that you could just download the Logos 6 software, because back when we moved from Logos 4 to 5, you could download Logos 5, just download it, but you wouldn't necessarily have any resources. But I remember downloading Logos 5 and installing it, not having purchased any version of Logos, and I was using it for some basic things. You can still do that. You can download Logos 5. But the note says here on the website, Logos Bible Software 6 is only available to customers who own a Logos 6 base package. If you do not own Logos 6, you'll need to download Logos 5 instead. So if you just want to try out Logos software, you can get 5. It's at logos.com/install5. You're not going to get a full library with that, but I believe you can just download and start using it to get a feel for the overall software. You can also just download the mobile apps for free, I believe. And I use them on iOS, and I have used them on Android, but I use it on an iPhone and an iPad.
Yeah, me too.
And they're very neat. I mean, you can't do everything in there, but you can even do parallel versions and stuff. So you can do some advanced material in there, but for the reading plans and just searching for Bible verses, it's a no-brainer. So you can download the apps, and I think they're free as well. They're not, of course, going to have a filled out library for you, but if you just want to get a feel for the app, I believe you can just go download it. Try that out. If you're interested in purchasing Logos, and I hope you are, please use our special link, because you can help Reform Forum out and save some money in the process. But if you go to logos.com/reformedforum, we have a partner page through which you can save 15%. So that could be a chunk of change. If you go in and buy one of the Reform, like the Reform base package or the Logos 6 base package, you can get in there and get some really neat stuff and save 15% in the process, and also give us a little bit of an affiliate income to our nonprofit organization, logos.com/reformedforum, and put a link to that in the episode description. Just one more list. I know you've gone through several features, but I posted this on the blog about a week or two ago. The Gold Edition does include 1,034 books. There's a new textual variants tool we didn't mention. There's a Lexham textual notes on the Bible that's included in that. There's a online textual variants manuscripts. If you are into the manuscripts and want to look at the differences between different manuscripts, then that's on there. You did mention some of that, Jared. There's some facsimile resources. Of course, there are 3 volumes of Atlas maps, a Psalm browser, a Proverbs browser. There's a glossary of semantic roles, all sorts of really neat things that are available through Logos. So you can visit them online for more information. You got anything else to say, Jared? Final concluding thoughts on the subject?
I mean, a big thanks to Logos for letting us, you know, browse around and see what it's like. And also just for the listener, I would really be interested to see how you use this and just all the maybe some features that we didn't mention or ways that you're using it either in your sermon prep, your papers, whatever it may be, because I'm constantly learning about what this thing can offer and different uses for it, again, and just in my context and trying to do some scholarly right. things with it. So if you could, you know, comment if you have a suggestion or, again, some more input, I would love to see it.
Yeah. I'd say overall, it's a very strong product, strong offering. I'm very happy to have it. I would definitely consider purchasing a base package if I didn't have it. I'm very thankful for Logos as well. I use it every single day, multiple times a day, in several different capacities. And there's just way more in here than I've even touched on yet. But even what I have used, I'm very happy with. And it's really powerful and useful. And I'm looking forward to using it even more. That being said, a lot of my basic use between 5 and 6 hasn't changed, but I'm looking forward to all the new features. So if you already have Logos 5 and you have a base package there and you're wondering whether or not to upgrade, you can call them. And I'm sure they can work something out with you and see all the resources you currently have, and they can customize plans for you. And so it's worth giving them a call, even if you're not finding, you know, exactly what you want on the website. So they have a phone number that you can call, 888-875-9491, if you'd like to talk to one of their representatives. Cool. Well, we want to thank Logos, and we want to point you to their website, logos.com. We also want you to visit us online at reformedforum.org and subscribe to our programs. And also, lately I've been trying to point people to the YouTube page. If you'd like to subscribe and get some videos, we're trying to shoot some more and do some interesting things. You can visit us online at youtube.com/reformedforum. Thanks so much.
Hear the origin story.
Yes. I was looking for a picture of a guy with like getting radiated like Spider-Man, but I couldn't find one from the website. If you want to hear about our origin story, you certainly can watch me talk about it on video. So it's there for you, although I don't believe I've been radiated, at least in a superhero way.
You lose all your hair.
Yeah, you do. And your beard turns red. Yeah. That's my superpower. Right. Well, we want to thank you so much for listening, and we hope you listen again to the Reformed Media Review.